The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I thought just before I came to sit here, there were two people visiting from Norway, and I started telling them a little story about a time I had in Norway. And I thought it might be interesting to finish the story for their sake. It has to do with Buddhism in Norway, and it might interest some of you just to hear a little bit about my life. I don't think I talk about it that much. I hope I don't. You know, I'm originally from Norway. I was born there. So my 21st year, when I was 21 years old, I went back to live in Norway. And at that time, I was already interested in Buddhism. So I was interested to see if I could do some Buddhist practice in Norway. And but there doesn't seem to be any that I could find. But I had a girlfriend. It's interesting. I don't know if it's interesting, but she came from a place outside of Trondheim. A place called Hell. So it was my girlfriend from Hell. Though she was very, very nice. She had gone to school to the coldest place in Norway. It's a place deep in the kind of mountains on the kind of away from the coast, and a place called Røros. When she lived there, she said there was in the local newspaper or magazine, there was an article about a Buddhist hermit, the Norwegian Buddhist hermit. And so I somehow had his address. I guess maybe I didn't have an address, you just write to the town. And the mail people will find him. And so I wrote to him and said, could I come and see you? And he wrote back a few weeks later saying yes, together with a long list of rules. Some of them seem kind of odd, but I kind of like just ignored that. And so in the middle of January, beginning of January, I think it was, I took my cross-country skis and I put them on the train, shipped them north to this cold place, and then I hitchhiked up there. And I remember hitchhiking my rubber boots. It was so cold because there's no insulation in rubber boots. I didn't know that. So standing there in the cold, trying to hitchhike, getting a ride, and it's kind of exciting. And then I finally made it to this little town, this little place, and went to the train station and got my skis, and then walked up the mountain. I don't know if I skied up the mountain, but I walked up the mountain. He was at last. He had two little cabins at the top of the road, end of the road, right at tree line, so up in the mountains. So I made it up there just as it was getting dark, and I knocked on the door, and he welcomed me in. And old man, his name was Einar Bear, and he was, I forget now, but ancient. So we were talking, he invited me in, we were talking a little bit, and so I asked him, what kind of Buddhist are you? And he said, I'm not a kind of Buddhist, I'm a disciple of the Buddha. And I said, oh, this is a profound guy. No sectarianism or anything. This is really good, I thought. But then he turned and he pointed to a picture on the wall, a photograph on the wall, the Buddha there. And it was a photograph, an old photograph, of what looked like a full-fledged Indian Swami with long hair and robes. And his name was actually Swami Acharya, which is not really names, more like titles. And what had happened was that in something like 1917 or something, this seemed to be a pretty well-regarded, erudite Indian Swami decided for some reason to move to Norway from India. And this guy, Einar, met him in Oslo and became his disciple. And at some point, after living in Oslo for a little while, this Swami decided to move to this cold place up in the mountains. And so Einar Bear followed him there. And after living there for some years, in the 1920s, the Swami decided that he was Maitreya Buddha, the next Buddha to be, right? So that made Aner Bear disciple of the Buddha. That's why he was a Buddhist. So that was unusual, I thought. And this Swami, he wrote, he had this book he showed me of, he wrote in English of poems that he wrote to the beautiful Norwegian milkmaids who would go up, what are they called, live up in the mountains during the summer? Budeya. And so he wrote poems to them about them or something. And and so they lived there, 20s, 30s. And then World War II happened, and the Germans invaded Norway. And the Swami decided he wanted to do... Oh, as the Germans were coming in, and coming into that part of Norway, the Swami was worried about all his religious books. He had a lot of books. And so they went and they to the basement or someplace of where they the building, and they walled them in, bricked them in, and putting bricks up and kind of hide everything behind the wall. And Aner Bear liked these to read these spiritual books. And so the last book that went in, I was going to go in and before they got sealed up, he opened the book randomly. It was a Buddhist book. And that page it opened up, it said, when a Buddha is born, when a Buddha is enlightened, and when a Buddha dies, the earth shakes in six ways. It's an earthquake. So he closed up the book, put it in, and they sealed up the wall so the Nazis couldn't get these books. Well, then at some point during the war, the Swami decided he had to do something to end the war. So I guess, I don't know if this is the usual thing for Swamis, but he decided to fast. And he fasted for a long time until at some point he fell into a coma. And Aner Bear said, my teacher is not going to die, not going to pass on, without coming back and saying some last words. So I want to be prepared for that. So he went down to town to make arrangements to get some salad, because it was hard to get fresh salad, I guess. It comes from salad from someplace in Trondheim or something. And I think it was whiskey or something, he said, for the Swami. And so also hard to get, I guess, during the war. And so so he went down the mountain to the valley below. And back then, everyone had these... so he was going to call Trondheim, the professor in Trondheim, he knew. And I guess kind of crank phone. And everyone had the same phone line. You would crank up or call the operator, and the operator would connect you. So he got on the phone. And when he got on the phone, the earth started to shake. And there were all these explosions. And there was all these people talking at the same time on the phone line, celebrating the end of the war. And the earth shaking was there blowing up the mines that the Germans left behind. So the earth shook, right? So then he said, then I knew that the Swami had died. My teacher had passed on. Because that's what happens, right? Buddhas die and the earth shakes. And so I said, he said something passed on or something. So did he die? And he said, well, his body continued for a few more days. But he had passed on, I guess. So that's probably you've never heard of that explanation for the end of World War II. Right there in the Pueblos. And so I lived with him for 2 weeks. And it was a beautiful place. I all remember really good weather those 2 weeks. And then every day I would go take my cross-country skis and go up cross-country skiing above tree lines, beautiful virgin snow, high above, far from anybody. It was so beautiful. And then I'd come back and I'd make food and spend the afternoon with him. And we would talk. And he would, mostly I was interested in stories he had to tell of the old days. And he was in 19, I don't know when it was, 1915, I don't know when, he met Kaiser William when Kaiser William sailed into Oslo and went to a party. So Kaiser William, that's an old guy. And then in 1917, he went to hear Krishnamurti. Krishnamurti was a young man, I guess, when he came to Oslo. And he also heard a lecture by Rudolf Steiner. So some of you might know Rudolf Steiner. He was a German anthroposophical kind of mystic Christian kind of guy, and one of the memorable moments of that in telling them about seeing Krishna, Rudolf Steiner, he kind of showed me, kind of acted it out. He said Rudolf Steiner got up on stage and stood at the very edge of the stage, and raised up his hands wide, like stretched out wide, and said, "On the threshold of death." So now you've gotten the transmission, the Rudolf Steiner transmission. Third hand, or second hand, or third hand, right? From 1917. That's pretty close. So I lived there for 2 weeks with him, and then I received a phone call from my mother that she was come back to Norway unexpectedly, and so I decided to go to, you know, visit her, and so I told Einar Baer, I was going to see my mother, going to leave, and he shook his head and said, "Oh, it's always the women." I think he had hopes for me that I would stay and I was going to help him with things. And so that's my story of finding Buddhism in Norway. So I hope that was okay to tell you the story. And if it's not, then maybe the Dharma talk will help. So what I'd like to talk about is letting go. And sooner or later, everybody has to learn how to let go. And you, sooner or later, everything that you have, everything that you know, everyone you love, everything that you cherish, will either leave you or you'll leave it, and you'll let go. You'll either let go willingly, or it'll be wrenched out of your hands, because it's all going to go, everything, sooner or later. And so, sooner or later, anybody who's going to live a wise, mature life, and be somewhat at peace with this life, is going to have to learn how to let go. And not only learn how to let go, but how to let go wisely. Maybe that's the most important point of today's talk, is the idea of letting go wisely. The idea that we all have to let go doesn't mean that you necessarily have to rush out now and let go of everything. But you're going to have, if you want to live gracefully or live peacefully, you're going to have to learn the skill of letting go. And I think most people, when they, I don't know if it's true for most people, but my assumption is that most people, when they hear about the teachings of letting go, are disturbed by it, don't like it. Because letting go means losing something which is important or precious. Or it might mean that we're diminished by it. There's less of something that's important for us that we need to have. Or some people don't trust the idea of letting go, because sometimes letting go is done in the wrong way, in stupid ways even. And people let go of the wrong things. But still, it doesn't. So there's reasons not to let go sometimes. There's reasons to avoid certain kinds of letting go. But even so, everyone has to learn to let go. If you don't learn it, chances are you'll suffer. You'll suffer a lot, probably. And we're asked in this life, sooner or later, to let go of things which ideally we would never have to let go of. Ideally, we would keep. Ideally, they would be unchanging. And it could be relationships. People die, people leave, people move. My poor 9-year-old son, his best friends who live a couple houses away might be moving far away. And it's, you know, when the news spread, it was really hard for all these little kids. What? They love each other so much. And maybe some of you, you know, as kids, your best friend left or you moved or something. And you know, you can go through the list of things that are nice to have, but are taken away. Your health, nice to have health. We want people to be healthy. We want people to take care of their health. But is there a guarantee? I'm of the age now that my peers, when we meet together, guess what we talk about. We talk about the things that are going in our body, the health, you know. It seems like, I don't know, it's true for those of you who are my age or older. You go through a phase like this. Do you get over it? Does it stop? you get through that part, that phase. You don't do that when you're in the 50s, and when you get 60s, you know, things stop and things stabilize. And what?
It's called the organ concert.
The organ concert.
Organ
concert. So,
and then you die.
So some people feel that letting go is a diminishment, but the wise letting go, and this is where the art of letting go is useful to learn, is to learn how letting go enhances us, how letting go is for our betterment, how letting go is actually brings actually joy. And one of the things I've learned in my life is that if I let go, which I have to do a lot in my life, if I let go, and if I don't feel some kind of joy in letting go, that I'm in trouble. That chances are it's going to come back and bite me, because chances are that not so far away there might be some resentment or grumpiness or some kind of discomfort or despair or something around what I've let go of. And so the trick, the art is, how do, not whether you like or don't like to let go, or whether you believe in letting go or not believing in letting go. I don't think those are interesting questions. I think the interesting question is, how can we approach letting go? How can we let go in such a way that it's for the betterment of ourselves and for others? How can we see benefit from it? One of the really good places to let go, to learn to let go, is not in the big things of sickness, old age, and death, and people dying, and all this, but rather is letting go of your compulsive thinking. And hopefully with your compulsive thinking, you can see that that it's for your betterment to not be compulsively, addictively thinking and ruminating that same thing over and over again. To sit down, to be able to sit down and meditate and not have your thoughts be in charge and just be driven and driven and driven to think the same thing over and over and over again, but rather to be able to let it go, let it drift away, let it diminish, let it settle down, let the mind calm down so that the mind can experience some peace, some ease, some clarity, some openness, some relaxation. And so to see that letting go of compulsive thinking is for our betterment. It improves us as a result. Maybe we're then willing to engage in the process of letting go. We can cling pretty hard to things which are not good for us. So there, it's easy to see this to our betterment. So people cling to addictive behavior. And usually they cling to it because they think it's going to provide something good. But often there's the confusion between pleasure and happiness. And so to have a sense that, oh, if I can let go of this addictive behavior, then something else might be able to happen. Something that can't happen if I keep, you know, pursuing the addiction. It takes sometimes a lot of trust, a lot of support, and a lot of courage to let go of some things that we're attached to. But hopefully we can do that. Some people are afraid of letting go, the teachings of letting go, because they think that if they let go, the teaching of letting go means that they're supposed to become passive, supposed to just accept everything the way it is, and not kind of not care about things, just kind of like whatever, let people just roll over them. Letting go sometimes is to let go of how we limit ourselves, how we limit our courage, for example. And sometimes what we let go of is we let go of our shyness or our embarrassment or our fear. And to be able to let go of fear so that we can do difficult things is a very useful thing to do. Sometimes we have to stand up against people and we have to go and have difficult conversations. And it's not letting go is not a matter of just letting go of, oh, it's okay, everything's fine, it's cool, you know, whatever you did, and I'll be okay with it, I'll just let go. That's not a wise way of letting go. What you might need to do, let go of, is let go of your fear to go up into the person and say, you can't do that anymore. You know, we have to have a discussion about what's happening here. And it can take a lot of courage or take a lot of letting go to overcome the fear that keeps us from having certain conversations. That we sometimes people avoid conversations for a lifetime, for decades, because it's so threatening or frightening to do it. So to have some sense that, yes, it's good to let go of fear and not be limited by it. It's good to let go of shyness and not be limited by it is a useful kind of reflection. Letting go is not only about, you know, letting go of things that are precious and valuable to us, but it's also letting go of the way we're trapped by the self-limiting behavior, self-limiting thoughts, behavior, thoughts and ideas and feelings that we have. So back to meditation. So to learn to let go in meditation, let go of compulsive thinking, and to learn what it feels like in the mind, the heart, and the body to have let go, to have the peace or the relaxation or the openness, and to experience that to such a degree that there's a lightening, there's a lifting, there's a kind of a joy or a delight that can arise. To see that correlation, to see that letting go of the clinging, the holding, the attachments in the mind, and see that doing that in meditation leads to a sense of well-being, teaches us a lesson. And teaches us a lesson that maybe it's possible to do that outside of meditation. Maybe it's possible to look when our body parts stop functioning the way that they were when they were in our 20s, or and things, it's clearly limited. Clearly we can't do the things we were used to doing. We can't go hiking anymore. We can't do all kinds of things. You could be bitter, could be angry, could be afraid of more of what's coming. Or you can look at the situation and say, now, here's an opportunity to let go. What's a wise way of letting go now, given that my knees won't hold me up anymore? What's a wise way to do it so it brings me some lightness, some joy, some ease? Is it possible? Is it valuable to do that? Or is it more valuable to hold on to all the ideas and concepts, anticipations, fears, resentments, angers about what we're losing? There can be a lot of ego, a lot of self-concept that operates around, I don't want to let go of it. It's so important for me to be the person who's fit. It's so important for me to be the self-sufficient person. It's so important for me to be seen a certain way. It's so important for me to have the pleasure that I'm used to having. And all these ideas, and generally what happens is people are holding on to their ideas about all these things rather than the actual, like, going for a walk. And so if in meditation we learn to let go of the compulsive thinking, then perhaps we can let go of that compulsive thinking outside of meditation as well. And so then becomes available is there can be that lightening of the mind, the lighting of the mind, the easing of the mind, even those situations as well. It doesn't mean that then we kind of just have to accept our bad knees and never go to the doctor. Please, go to the doctor. Do what you have to do. To try to take care of yourself. But, doctors can't fix everything. And so at what point, go to the doctor and let go. Let go of the way that we cling and tight and hold around things. Be someone who gets old and decrepit happily. I talked recently with a man who said that his quality of his life diminishes a certain point, he's going to take his life. He doesn't want to go beyond a certain point. And I told him, I had a number of conversations with this person. This is the only conversation I've had. I said, I know someone who's gone through very much the thing you've gone through, but it's further ahead of you in it. And his life is quite limited, but he's really happy. And I said to him, it's possible that when you come to that point in your life, that you'll be happy. Don't assume you're going to be unhappy, because then it might become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you live in that world of your thoughts and ideas, oh, this is going to be terrible when it happens. Oh, it is terrible when it's happening. But maybe if he has an open mind to the situation, maybe it's possible to experience happiness even, or joy, if he lets go. What does he have to let go of? What really deep things do we have to let go of? And I think this man that I know is not an easy task for him to let go of the years and years of challenges of his life that have accumulated in his thoughts and his memories of it. But is it possible to let go? What does it mean to let go? How do we let go? Some people don't want to let go. Some people, for example, if you have to let go of... some people hold on really tight to their memories. Some people hold on really tight to their feelings and their emotions, to their sense of self. Sometimes people are very stubborn. Sometimes there's a lot of pride. Sometimes there's a lot of fear of the alternative. And some people would rather die proud and miserable than than happy and... What's the opposite? What's the good opposite of pride? Humility, humble. Yeah, is that the good opposite? Any other candidates? My candidate is just be peaceful. Be peaceful. So some people are unwilling to let go because of the, you know, their grip is so tight. But perhaps at the other side of releasing, the other side of letting go, of opening up, of putting down, perhaps there can be peace, happiness, and well-being. Because a lot of that depends not on... some of that depends, and certainly the deep spiritual happiness depends on having let go of the compulsions in the mind, the addictions in the mind. And so if the mind has let go, maybe it doesn't matter so much how the body is. The other thing that I've taught before is the idea that of letting go has two sides. There's the letting go of something, which is what most people think about when they think about letting go, and then there's letting go into something. And I think this concept of letting go into. So the analogy I give is that of you can hold on to the diving board, you can even hang on to it. Hold on for dear life, hanging in the end of the diving board, not going to let go. But if you let go of the diving board, then you let go into the pool. And if it's a hot day, that feels really good to fall and let go and fall into the pool. So to let go and be wise about it, to look at how for your betterment, it's useful to consider what can I let go into? So letting go is not only about what is let go of, but also what's gained in the process. And so letting go into peace, letting go into calm, letting go into courage, letting go into the right action that has to be done, letting go into joy, letting go into some kind of more settled place, letting go into the present moment more fully. There's many things we can let go into. Sometimes, you know, interpersonally, there can be a lot of clinging that inhibits intimacy. And so perhaps letting go of certain kind of clinging allows for let go into intimacy, into a closer connection, more empathy with someone else. So the challenge that I'd like to offer all of you is that one way to get to let go wisely is to do your homework around letting go. And only you can do that. And the homework would be to consider, to actively consider and reflect, how is it that letting go can be done so it betters you? It enhances your life rather than diminishes it. What ways can it better you? What can you focus on? What can you let go into so that in letting go, you benefit from letting go? So, you know, if my knees give out and I can't hike anymore, I might have to let go of being able to hike. But if I only focus on, oh, well, I have to let go of that, then I'm shortchanging myself a little bit perhaps what I can reflect on also is I have to let go of the hiking. In letting go of that, what can I let go into? And maybe it's something as simple as I can let go of the into the peace of not obsessing about what it means to go hiking. Maybe, you know, something like that. But there might be more clear things you can let go into. What's the good opportunities that are available to you in doing the letting go? So those are my thoughts. And I offer those thoughts with a hope that you'll do that homework, that you'll reflect and think about it, because I don't think that it's so useful for someone like me just to come and tell you, you know, this is why it's good to let go or how it's to be done. I think it's something each person has to learn themselves. So we have about 10 minutes. And so I welcome invite any of you to ask any questions about that or give some testimonials about letting go. It'd be great to have a good testimonial. If there are people here who have let go, I don't know if any of you have gotten around to that yet.
It's a quasi-testimonial, because today I spent a lot of time talking with a friend who has to give up driving and lives in Portland. And he did. He let go into such happiness, moved into an apartment downtown and learned to take the tram and the public transportation and was really quite gleeful about it. And I thought that was, I thought of that when you were talking, because he was quite pleased with himself.
But he was reluctant at first.
Oh, yeah. He loves to drive. So.
Great, thank you. I thought you were going to speak. I thought you were going to say something. You must have some experience with this topic.
Let go of the microphone.
Well, I'm afraid I have to say something that's not a testimony, but is a deep concern of mine about a dear person that I married who is not into any kind of, you might say, self-growth, meditative, spiritual, just a wonderful person who doesn't go there. I can't even talk philosophy. So, but it's time in her life, I think, to let go. And the two big things she has to let go of to be happy, to be peaceful, is letting go of having lived in a wonderful place in Emerald Hills, a house that we built ourselves for 23 years, and now she lives in the flats of Redwood City. And she's not letting go. And then a double mastectomy, very unfortunate. And now she has to let go of, you know, she thought she could have implants and stuff that didn't work out. So now she has to let go of not looking like other women and like she looked all her life. So I'm in a place of saying, you know, I wish I could, for example, play this CD for her. And say, honey, you know, I love you, listen to this, but I don't think that's going to work.
No, you have to be very careful with that.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So I know. I don't. There might be something useful I could say. Theoretically, someone could say to you that would help your wife or help the situation. The thing that comes to my mind, the first thing would be not to address that issue, but since you're here, to consider. What do you need to let go of in a wise way? And what's the wise letting go for you in this situation? And occasionally we have to let go of other people's interfering or being involved with other people's choices, and let go and allow them their autonomy to make sometimes poor choices. And then the question is, what's the advantage of that?
I think I just made up the advantage that she would be more peaceful and happy if she let it go. But I made that up, I guess.
Yeah.
It appears to me.
And but if you let go, what's the advantage to you or the whole situation if you let go of trying to change her?
Then I have to continue to witness what I think is her being unhappy, mm-hmm. and say, well, that's the way it is.
It could be painful. But is it? But maybe that's required of you, and if that's required of you, how do you do it in such a way that that it's not just a downer for you? What do you have to let go of so that it, in the language of the talk, it's for your betterment in a sense?
Well, thank you. That's my homework.
Yeah, and you know, it's unfortunate if you have to do that homework, but you might have to do it.
I'm Tom. Thank you. That was really apropos. This is my first time tonight here. I've been doing the yoga earlier, and a friend of mine...
Okay, a little closer.
A friend of mine suggested that I stay for the meditation and listening. When I was 32, my wife died. When my youngest son was born, I had three little boys under 10, and my whole life just changed. And I was really miserable for quite some time. I got over it. My life has been absolutely wonderful. I'm very close to my boys. I've gotten involved with helping people who've gone through similar situations. And my life turned out, I had a lot of other changes, career changes. I could no longer travel for business. Everything has worked out incredibly well, better than I ever imagined. I think it was just from learning to let go. Anyway, thanks.
So if I may ask you...
Yes.
So it sounds like there was a lot of huge upheaval change in your life. You had to let go of a lot of what life that you were used to that you knew. Of the things that you let go of, other things that changed...
Fear.
You don't have to give an example, but I'm curious of an example... Of a situation where you were most conscious about letting go of something, and in letting go, you saw that things got better.
Something that comes to mind was my career, and losing my wife and being a single parent and having a huge fear around. I had a 12-day-old baby when she died, and I was changing diapers and dealing with daycare and everything by myself. And I was also realizing that I was not going to have a career that I had had for a lot of years. And so I had financial insecurity around that. I don't know what happened. I just let go of it, and the fear went away. I just believed that something would come along. I was actually on unemployment for a little while. And when the unemployment ran out, something else came along that was 10 times better than what I was doing. I had my own hours. Financially, it was a whole lot better. I had a lot more flexibility. And I think it really happened when I just let go and let go of the fear and just was open to whatever was going to replace it. Mm-hmm. And I had an idea, but I really didn't know. I was just open to looking and not hanging on to what I had. So
great. Thank you, Tom. Okay. So it's 9:00, so we should let go. If you want to bring up something more, I'll stay up here. So thank you all very much.